Good afternoon. For those of you that it is afternoon, I am Jane. I am a recovered compulsive overeater, carb and processed food addict, and grateful to be here today and be able to do service. I came into OA at 22 years old. I am almost 66 years old today. At that time, I weighed 246 pounds. I was given a gray sheet, just a low carb food plan, and I lost all my weight very quickly. I thought I was cured. I soon learned I was not cured and would never be. This is a permanent, progressive, and fatal disease. One day, I picked up an innocent cookie for no particular reason, or with any forethought about possible consequences. Before I knew what had happened, I was binging out of control, miserable, and regaining weight. I would go on to struggle to get back on a clean, weighed, and measured food plan for many years to follow. I tried HOW OA and other weighed and measured food plans for many years, trying to find the perfect one that would fix me, take away my cravings, give me that food freedom. I was treating the food plan like a diet and using OA for group support. I was to go on doing this for many years and never put together more than a few months of abstinence at a time. I would go back out binging for months and then come back desperate and hurting and full of shame, willing to try again. It wasn't until the beginning of COVID in March of 2020 that I finally got it, that this disease was going to kill me if I didn't take it seriously and put my recovery first in my life, above everything else. I was truly scared of dying, and I made the decision to retire early at age 62 and devote my time and energy to recovering from this disease and getting healthy. The first two pictures on the left are me at around my top weight of 350 pounds. And the picture on the right is a more recent picture of me that shows you my physical recovery since March of 2020. It's with my master's rowing crew. I'm actually third from the right. This shows you that I am living my dream of enjoying retirement on the water with a healthy, active body, mind, and spirit free from food compulsion, one day at a time for the last 3 years. Freedom from years of riding a roller coaster of weight gain and loss. So, what changed from my first 41 years of struggles in OA to get to experience the fun and freedom I have in my life today? Two things. Two big things. First, how I defined my plan of eating and abstinence had to change. I had to get totally honest with myself about what all of my alcoholic foods and behaviors were. These alcoholic foods and behaviors are what I abstain from. The behaviors are straightforward for me. No eating while sitting in front of the TV, no eating while driving a vehicle, and no snacking. The behaviors were a major part of my binges and needed to be excluded to not set myself up for failure by triggering the compulsion. Once those nerve pathways were grooved in my brain years ago as a child, to associate certain behaviors with binging, They could not be undone. They are permanent. So now the alcoholic foods I abstain from are carbohydrates, processed and fake foods, dairy, and nuts. In addition to the most common substance, sugar, I needed to give up all starchy carbohydrates to get fruit freedom from food cravings. They say some of us are sicker than others. I rode that garbage truck of compulsive overeating all the way to the dump. My body and mind were so sensitive to carbs that even artificial sweeteners set me off. So-called sugar-free gum just kept the compulsion alive and thriving in me, never giving me any peace. I was grateful to find a doctor, I think this was a God deal, who explained to me that there is no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. He explained to me that our body's liver can make all the carbohydrates our body ever needs. I thought I knew everything about nutrition and diet. I was wrong. I learned that if I kept my food simple, free of my alcoholic foods, and ate only whole, unprocessed foods, I did not need to restrict or weigh and measure my food. Because when I ate these clean foods, my body got the nutrition it needed, and my physical allergy was not triggered. I no longer worry about reading labels because whole foods only have one ingredient. Weighing and measuring triggered the diet mentality and perfectionism in me and set me up for out of control binging and weight gain cycles. Fake foods like a pizza made with cauliflower crust is still a pizza to my brain and will leave me craving and wanting the real thing. As also an alcoholic, I wouldn't play around with fake beer. Would you? Bottom line, if I do not ingest my alcoholic foods or practice my binging behaviors, the phenomenon of craving is not triggered by what or how I eat. So, what do I eat? That is where the tool plan of eating comes in. I eat a variety of meats, eggs, and a few green vegetables, with plenty of healthy fats and salt. I typically eat two larger meals a day instead of three. I have the option of a third meal if I need it. I plan my food the day before and send it to my sponsor. I let her know if I need to make any changes. This practice keeps me honest and accountable with what I put in my body every day. Sounds boring, I know. But the fact is, today I eat to live instead of eat living to eat. I love my food today, and it is very simply satisfying and easy to plan and prepare. I can, for the first time in my life, listen to my body and know when I'm full. That is a wonderful freedom I never dreamed possible. So, the second thing I had to change to recover, while I had to start with the first step of getting my brain and body clean and sober from my alcoholic foods and behaviors, I knew my disease could be triggered by more than just ingesting my alcoholic foods. I used my alcoholic foods to cope with life, the daily buildup of emotions, because I did not know how to cope alone. I thought I had to be in control of my life. I had to do it all without any help. I surrendered the food. Now I needed to find a higher power that I could surrender my life to and trust that they would love me unconditionally and take care of me as long as I stayed close to them, and I did my part. I also needed my tribe of fellows I found in OA to connect with, learn from, and grow with every day. This is where the 12 steps came in for me. They were my path to a spiritual awakening so I could receive the many promises of this program. I have to work the steps and use the tools daily, like my life depends on it, because I learned that it does. So today I live in steps 10, 11, and 12 by working them every day. I learned that what I prioritize gets done. When I put abstinence and recovery first in my life, everything else, over everything else, I recovered, not until. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jane. We appreciate your share. Our next speaker today is Lisa from Barrie, Australia.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I live in a little country town on the east coast of Australia down south. And it's wonderful to be here. What an amazing opportunity. I came into OA about 27 years ago, and I did a couple of meetings, and I thought, there's no way I'm doing this. I was not ready. I remember hearing a lady sharing at the meeting, the first meeting I went to, that when she finished her meal at night, she washed up, cleaned up in the kitchen, left the kitchen, and didn't go back. And I thought, how the hell do you do that? And anyway, so I kind of bounced in and out of OA over the years and never really took anything seriously. The problem I had was I thought I could control it myself. I thought that this was an illness that I could fix. I had gotten sober in another program, and I'd been sober for many years. And I thought, if I could just use that program to help me get over my food addiction, I'd be sweet. That'd be great. But that never worked. Never, ever. And so I just kept piling on the weight. And I had a condition, I had a medical condition and condition, ulcerative colitis, which is an inflammatory bowel disease. It's an autoimmune disease. And the way I was eating was actually making me a lot sicker. And anyway, I'd suffered with that disease for about 7 years, and then I had to have life-saving surgery. And that changed my whole digestive tract. And I remember one of my doctors saying, you're going to be able to eat whatever you like now. You're never going to put on weight. And I thought, fantastic. I've been given a green light to go for it. And but in amongst all that, I was desperately unhappy. And I absolutely hated myself. I loathed myself. I would look in the mirror and I would run myself down. And I just couldn't understand why I couldn't fix this, why I didn't have the power to fix this. And so I came back into OA a bit over 3 years ago. And my first sponsor said, "Radio, you need to eat." Her food plan for me was you eat a bucket of food for breakfast, a bucket of food for lunch, and a bucket of food for dinner. Now, the surgery that I'd had on my digestive tract, I can only eat small meals. I still have a full stomach, but I've had most of my large intestine removed, and I can't eat like that. I would end up in hospital. And so after coming to the meetings for a few weeks, I thought I need to get the help of a professional. And so I sought out a dietitian and nutritionalist, and she didn't know anything about OA. And so I needed to educate her kindly. And so she gave me a food plan, not for me to lose weight, but to learn how to eat properly. Three meals a day, three small meals a day, three snacks if you need it. And she made that food plan for me to meet all the nutrient requirements I need. And interestingly, she knew a bit about cravings and emotional eating. And she said, if you're able to meet your nutritional requirements, the cravings will lessen. And I thought, well, that's a start. That's a start. So then I had a new sponsor, and it was right in the middle of COVID, and I got a sponsor from Texas. And I actually prayed for a sponsor that was going to help me to, because this time, I mean, all the meetings I've done on OA since coming back have all been on Zoom. My closest face-to-face meeting's 3 hours away, and I'm not ready to start one. And so thank goodness for Zoom. I actually thank God for Zoom that this has turned our little OA fellowship into a global fellowship. And so I prayed to God because I'd been asking to get a sponsor and everyone was very busy already sponsoring. And I just prayed, God, please bring me the lady you want me to work with. And when I met this lady, I would never have chosen her, not in a million years. But you know what? She was perfect for me. And she took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous for food addiction. I thought, what a strange thing to do. And I did have a spiritual awakening. And I've been blessed with abstinence, just over 3 years abstinence. So my food plans needed to be adopted by me for me because of, a significant medical condition. And one of the things that my food plan gives me many things. It gives me peace of mind. It's given me my health back. I was probably about 20 kilos heavier than I am now. And so I was huge for me. And I'm only 5 foot. And I remember I love horse riding. And I've got a couple of horses at home. And I got on my horse one day when I was at my peak weight and she groaned. She let out this, ooh. And I thought, oh my stars, my horse doesn't groan anymore when I get on her back. And I thought, my poor little horse, she's had to put up with me all those years because in my overweightness, I was in denial. I used to look at, I've got this whole body dysmorphia thing going as well. I would look at myself in the mirror at the fattest I was and think, you look all right. You're not too bad. And then now that I've lost the weight, I look in the mirror and I think, oh my stars, the weight's coming back on. Now it's not. It's not. It's there's something that is different about me as a food addict that this disease centers in my mind. And so I need to have people take photos of me so I know what I actually look like. And just for, if you're new or near new, I'm just going to read out a paraphrased of the version of abstinence. The definition of abstinence for all of our members. Abstinence is refraining from compulsive food behaviors that create obsessive thinking and destructive acting out on food. I have been freed from that one day at a time. A plan of eating helps us each day to get and remain abstinent. However, this may change over time. And my food plan has definitely changed. I don't need to eat as much as I used to. Now, if somebody had said that to me at the beginning, I would have completely freaked out. Because not that I was a volume eater, but I was a grazer. I would graze all day. I'll probably consume 5,000 calories when I didn't need, probably only needed about 1.5. Abstaining, attaining, and maintaining a healthy body weight is a result of our abstinence. In order to continue being abstinent, it is suggested to have a power greater than ourselves operating in our lives daily. This is always available to us. As long as we continue living in the 12 steps, we need to trust God's guidance in everything we do. And today I do believe I have let God help me with my food addiction. And every morning when I get up, I spend time connecting with my higher power. I've had to develop a relationship with my higher power. And you know, the lovely thing about this fellowship, you don't have to have a higher power if you don't want to, but I needed one. And it was important that I know I need one. And I'm willing to connect with that higher power. I don't write out my food plan anymore. I don't need to send it to my sponsor. It is just part of my life. And it's a very important part of my life, but my connection with my higher power and coming to the meetings and doing service and sponsoring people is just as important. You guys have saved my life, and I'm so grateful for that. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, Lisa. All right, our third speaker for today is Rocky. Welcome, Rocky.
Hello, I'm Rocky. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'll just take a second to qualify and then get into how my plan of eating looks diverse. So I'm a compulsive overeater, a volume eater, binge eater. At my highest, I was double a healthy body weight. And I came to the program because I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to look thin and beautiful, like all of the recovered people in the room. And if all of these people told me at the beginning, it's not about the weight, you know, it's not about the food, it's not about the weight. And I thought, man, I must not belong here because for me, my whole life is about the food. Of course, it's about the food. I'm all about the food. I wake up thinking about the food. I go to sleep thinking about the food. If I'm in the kitchen, I'm eating. And, you know, it got to the point for me in my disease where, like, I would be cooking chicken, like raw chicken, and I couldn't not lick my fingers or taste the seasonings. Even though I knew how gross it was, I was eating in secret. I was hiding food from my partner. I would buy food, drive home, eat it, feel guilty, drive to the grocery store to buy the same thing and replace it. My entire life revolved around the food. My dates revolved around food. My relationships revolved around food. I found a way. I got a beautiful, lovely sponsor who does not follow the same plan of eating that I did, and that's okay. For a long time, I held a lot of shame around my plan of eating. It took me a long time to be able to talk about it openly. And now I do because it looks different than other people's. So for me, my plan of eating is all behavior based. So this means I don't have any red foods and I don't have any green foods. And I'll hear people say occasionally, like, wow, that sounds so wonderful to not have any red foods to be able to eat whatever you want. And the way I phrase it is technically that means for me that every food that I eat is a yellow food. Every food that I eat, I have to have the right mindset and the right mentality before it goes into my mouth. So for me, I have what I call my eight pillars of abstinence. So the very first one I have is that I have not binged. And for me, I know what this means. A binge looks different to different people. So yeah, I haven't binged. The second one is that I ate only because I was hungry. So for me, this means I'm not eating for control or productivity or preparation or relief or comfort or all of the things that I used to eat for. I used to eat any time a feeling arose. And now I've learned that eating is not emotional. For me, food is not therapy. Food is fuel. Number two is that I stop when I'm full. This was really, really tough for me to learn what full meant. Before OA, I was so disconnected from my body that I didn't believe I had the capacity to know what full meant. You know, I would Google thyroid issues and I would Google people who can't feel fullness. And the truth is that I was so disconnected from my own body and my own experience that I had no idea what full looked like. I had to actually sit down with a food. I would like cut it up into eight different pieces, and I would eat one bite, take a break, and journal about it. And then I would take a second bite, write down what I was experiencing, journal about it, take a rest, and come back and eat another one and train myself to understand different cues that I have. I had no idea that I would sigh when I started getting full. I'd push my plate away a little bit. I would take my eyes off of the food and I would start to look up and recognize that there's this whole world happening around me outside of this food on my plate. And I had to teach myself what full meant. The next one is that I did not eat in secret. For me, this is different than eating alone. I used to habitually eat and eat, right? And then my partner would come around the corner and this shame would just well up in me. And of course, I couldn't take accountability for the shame. That would be ridiculous. What I would do is I would deflect, right? So my poor partner would come around the corner. I would be shoving food into my face and I would say things like, "Aren't you supposed to be doing the laundry? Aren't you supposed to be some shouldn't isn't there something?" And I couldn't even tell you that I was feeling shame because the shame was so overwhelming. So for me, not eating in secret means that if anybody walked into the room, anyone, my boss, my partner, they would be okay with like the bites that are entering my mouth, the portion size on my plate, and I don't have to replace the food if somebody finds out about it. The next one is that I don't snack on ingredients. Historically, I could stand in the kitchen and I could eat an entire meal just cooking. And then I would sit down at the table and I would eat a full other meal. So I do not snack on ingredients at all when I'm cooking. This means I don't lick. I'm allowed to have a taste if I've predetermined I can have a taste and it's numbered. I'm like, okay, I need to have one sample of this to make sure that it has enough whatever before it goes into the oven. But I don't stand and eat while I'm cooking. The next one is that I don't fill time between meals. So this means I'm not allowed to plan my activities out based on when I would eat next. So I'm not allowed to say, okay, I have 3 hours before dinner. What can I do with myself for 3 hours? And for me, this is about living my life fully and presently and being intentional in my life. So my life does not revolve around food. I eat when it's time to eat, and I don't fill the space in between my life. I live my life, and food is something that happens in between. And then I have not bartered with a day that is not today, or in a way that leaves me hungry later. So it was a pretty common behavior for me to, wake up in the morning and think I'm going to eat a healthy breakfast, and I go, well, I'm just going to have one slice of this and I won't have dessert later. Right. And I eat my one slice and of course I'm not satisfied. So I go, I'm going to have a second slice of this and then I'll eat a smaller dinner later. You know what? I'm just going to eat the whole thing and then I won't eat dinner at all later. And then by the evening time, I would be so hungry that of course I would eat and I already blew the day, because I ate all those slices earlier. So we'll just start tomorrow. And so I don't barter in a way that leaves me hungry later. What I eat is what I eat. And if I'm not okay with eating that right now with no substitutions later, then I don't eat it. And my last, what I call pillar of abstinence, is that I have not treated my body as a trash can. So historically, I came from a home that, didn't have a lot. We grew up in poverty. And so I was very much taught, like, eat what's on your plate and don't waste anything. And I have learned that food will either go to waste in the garbage can or it will go to waste on my waist, right? Waste or waste, it's still the same thing. So if I'm saving food from the garbage can by shoveling it into my body, I have made myself a garbage can, and I know that my higher power has not created me to be a trash can. And I don't eat food that's unsatisfying. I don't eat food that is rotten. I don't finish bites off of other people's plates. And I traditionally try and leave two bites on my plate all the time. That keeps me from having the mentality that I have to finish it or that I know how much I should eat. That's my behavioral plan. And for me, that works. I did for a long time try doing weighed and measured food, and I ended up being more in the food than ever before. And so this plan worked for me. And I'm so grateful for that because it's an alternative plan and none of the other diets worked. So thank you so much for listening to me. I am happy to, to take any questions, and thank you for all of you doing service. You are so important and make this program run, and I pass.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, Rocky. We appreciate all of our speakers. All right, we'll move into our time of Q and A. I'll be reading out the questions to the speaker, and then the speaker will have time for brief answers. If there is a question that you want to direct to any specific speaker, that's fine too, or we'll just ask everyone to give an answer. And we'll allow for about 2 minutes for responses. So let's see what questions we have first. Here we go. Some people have a food sponsor and a step sponsor. I'm a person struggling to regain my abstinence from a long-term relapse. Would a food sponsor be advised for me? I have a step sponsor already. Any answers?
I can answer on that, give you what I would suggest. For me, it's important to have one sponsor. It keeps it simple, and the one sponsor knows the entirety of how I'm working the steps and how I'm working my food plan, because to me, step one is about getting abstinent. And so that is part of working the steps. And I don't know. For me, I just think it would, one, complicate it, and I might get two different messages. It's important, I think, for my recovery that I only have one sponsor. So that's what all I have to share. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane. Would either of the other two speakers like to answer that question?
For me, secrets keep me sick, and I'm a notorious secret keeper. It would be very easy for me to tell my two sponsors two different things or go shopping for the right answer. So for me, for accountability, one sponsor is the answer for me.
I agree with that too. My sponsor was she certainly helped me. I had to probably for the first 2 years, I sent my food plan to her every day, and that was a really good habit because that actually kept me honest. And if I was going to change anything, I'd let her know. However, she was very relieved that I worked with a dietitian and nutritionalist. She said to me, "I'm not an expert. I don't know what you're meant to eat." And even though I'm an educated woman, I've got a couple of health degrees, I didn't have a clue either. And I'd worked as a shift worker for many years, and we lived on coffee and chocolate. So I didn't have a clue. And I was a sugar addict big time. And so I would really advise, if you've had a long relapse, and if you haven't engaged the help of a professional, maybe give it a shot. And because there are people who I know in America, there are dietitians and nutritionalists that specifically work with people in OA. And I had that lady as well. I had one in Australia and one in America. And I just think if, it's for me, it's about being safe with food and being willing to go to absolutely any lengths, even if it's inconvenient. And my sponsor would say to me, "Service isn't convenient, Lisa. It's not meant to be convenient. Getting abstinent and going to meetings and working out a food plan, that's not convenient. I was all about being convenient. I was on Easy Street. My dream was to be able to eat all the sugar I want. I had this thing that I used to fantasize. I could eat all the food I wanted. And as it was going down my food pipe, it would turn into celery, So I wasn't right in the head. So I think, yeah, that's my suggestion anyway.
Thank you so much. So another question regarding a universal food plan: is sugar or flour something that you abstain from?
I'll jump in on this one. I can actually eat flour. I cannot eat sugar. And so I have flour, I have bread on my food plan, but it's weighed and measured. So my food plan is weighed and measured. And, one of the things that really helped me when I first got sober, I first got abstinent, I joined the Better Together meeting that comes out of America, which was amazing. And after the meeting, they have like a 2-hour guided discussion, which was incredible. And I remember one of the hosts would always say, because I'd say, I can eat this, I can eat that, and it doesn't seem to worry me. And he said, well, it's not your problem. And, he would talk about the things that were his problem. And he said, you need to know what your problem is with food. You need to know really clearly which foods, when you put them into your body, sets up, it's like an allergy. It sets up this craving that once you start that food, you can't stop. And I had to get really honest about that stuff. That, yeah, if I put any kind of sugar in my, like cakes, biscuits, any of that stuff, that sets up a craving in me. And then I start binging, and not even God can stop that stuff. Like it is so powerful in me. So it's working out and being really honest with yourself, because I had to give up a lot of stuff that I have lived on for years, but it didn't serve me well. It was keeping me really sick, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So, and that I was able to do that with the help of people in the fellowship. And it takes time to develop a food plan that suits you. It'll give yourself time. I looked at the grey sheet and the things that were offered in OA, and it screamed deprivation to me. If I had to eat cottage cheese every day, I'd give up. That's just not my thing. You need to be able to have a food plan that you actually like what you're eating, but it's safe. It's safe for you. So thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Jane or Rocky, would you all like to respond to that question?
Yeah, I think something that my sponsor said that really stuck with me is that it's not Sugar and Flour Anonymous, right? It's Overeaters Anonymous. And that means that overeating or inappropriate behaviors with food look different. And for me, one of the reasons this program was successful is because nothing was universal, right? I can follow a diet and lose weight like nobody's business for a minute, right? And then I would fall off the wagon. But when I really had to create my own path and be really honest with my higher power and my sponsor about what my problems were, I was able to come up with a different defined abstinence. I actually did no sugar and no flour for a year, and I lost weight, and I was more in the food than I ever had been because for me, it was not about the flour and sugar. It's about the ways that I was abusing food and the sheer volume that I was putting in, the way I was replacing my higher power with food. Yeah, and that's totally my experience. That is just me speaking. I do have sponsees that say, like, when I eat this food, I cannot stop eating. And that's okay. Like, that is good to have on your abstinence and good to know about yourself. And it's kind of just about figuring out what feels right to you. And for me, I know that I'm on the right path when I don't have to negotiate, when I don't have to explain, and when I don't have to keep secrets.
Thank you, Rocky. Jane, would you like to respond?
We all have to find our own way. And I hear people talk about how that makes OA more difficult, because we do have different allergies. For me, I had an allergy to those and some others. Some people apparently don't, and it is more just about their behaviors. I had a physical allergy to certain foods, including the sugar and flour. to really to process foods for me. And it was just as important that I gave those up as I gave up drinking alcohol for my alcoholism. So that's about as black and white, for me, that's how it had to work. That's why I struggled for 41 years in getting abstinent, because I couldn't get that honest with myself. And I just kept trying to diet and eat those foods in moderation. I cannot eat a drug in moderation. I just can't. I wish I could, but I can't. And I accept that today, and that gives me a lot of freedom. Thanks for letting me share on that.
Thank you, Jane. All right, our next question. I am curious how to best define what a binge is in terms of abstinence goals. They're having a tricky time finding the best language to articulate my goal around stopping eating when I'm full.
That is a tricky one. And I know that feeling that even though I weigh and measure my food, that sometimes on some days at some meals, I think, oh my stars, I could just eat. I could just keep eating that. I could just keep eating that. I'm a compulsive overeater. Of course, I'm going to get that. And so what I need to do is pray, take the plate to the kitchen when I'm finished. Weighing and measuring is really good for me because it stops me from lying to myself. Take my plate to the kitchen and I walk outside the door. I just do something different. I've got to distract myself. I might ring my sponsor. I might jump on a meeting. And because I don't give in to that, because it took me so long to get back here and to get well. I'm nearly 58. And I've only just got 3 years abstinence. I was out this, from a teenager, suffering with this disease. And I also have exercise bulimia. And I didn't realize I had that either. I nearly exercised myself to death. So I think it's kind of, for me, it was like getting layers of honesty. But also recognizing too that I couldn't stand my internal state. I had to learn to process those feelings that are really strong that used to lead me to the food and learn to sit them out. And that was hard. And I needed to get outside help with that and inside help with that. And yeah, it's a day at a time, isn't it? A day at a time, one meal at a time. But when I get that thing of, yeah, I just want to keep eating all night, that's old behavior. I'm not going to give up my abstinence for anything or anyone. And so I really stick to that. But yeah, at times I do. I need to get up and I need to own it. And I go, righto, Lisa, your meal's done. You are done. And you may feel like you're going to eat, but you don't need it. Now get up and get out of the house. Go and ring someone. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. The next question: how do you find out what nutrients you need when there is so much conflicting information out there, even between nutritionists?
That is a tough one. I do think you have to have somebody you trust that, whether it's a doctor, and doctors really don't have much nutritionist training. I was fortunate to find one that did, but that's hard to do. But I do think word of mouth from other OA people that have nutritionists that they trust and that they know how OA works. And what abstinence is, I think, and somebody mentioned talked about that earlier, but I think that's very helpful. The nutritionists are probably the most trained in what nutrients are needed, but even like the person said, there's even a lot of conflict out there because there just is, period. So you have to trust, pray about it, talk with your sponsor, talk with other people that have what you want, that yeah, it's a tough one. It really is. But talk to a lot of people that you trust. I think that's the biggest thing is building a you have to feel good about it, or you're not going to do it. You're not going to commit to it.
Thank you, Jane. Next question. What do you recommend to your sponsees for food when they're traveling, eating out, or when they're ill?
I'll take a go at this one. For me, my job is not to tell my sponsees what to do. My job is to share my experience, strength, and hope. and then to ask them questions. So for me, I don't make decisions for my sponsee. I say, when I'm going out of town, these are the things that I set in place. You know, what do you think will work for you? Or, you know, have you considered reaching out to your fellows who share similar eating habits as you do and seeing what they did, and then kind of collecting and figuring out from there. I'm a big believer that my job is only to share my experience, strength, and hope.
Thank you, Rocky. All right, next question. Do you have eating or mealtime windows? And if yes, do you have flexibility built in?
My food plan, it's not rigid. Like the what the food that I have my set foods that are safe for me to eat. But it just depends on my day. And there was a time when I first got abstinent that I was working as a midwife and I had to go and visit mums at home, and it was during COVID. Sometimes I wouldn't get back to the office to have a meal. And so I had to actually eat in the car. Otherwise, I wouldn't have eaten. And I couldn't stick by other people's really strict rules that they need to do for them. For the work that I do, I was a shift worker and I worked all over. I used to have to drive many kilometers visiting people, families at home. I had to be flexible, but the trick for me was what really helped is I was really prepared. That I took my food with me. I pre-prepared all my food. And so it wasn't, and if I was ever in a situation where I had no food and it was, and I actually really needed to eat, if I can find a supermarket and I can just buy a few fresh things, then as long as it for me it contains some carbohydrates, some protein, and a vegetable or salad or something, I can make a meal out of that. Something that really helped me in early recovery, a lady said to me, not every meal has to be fabulous. It just has to be abstinent. And that's really true for me. So I hope that helps.
All right, what are red, green, and yellow foods?
Well, typically it's red, yellow, and red light, I mean, and green light foods, which basically means a green light food is something you can eat, you're comfortable with, it doesn't set up a craving, you can stop when you're full, it's just you've never binged on it, it's never caused problems. A red light food is just the opposite. You know it causes you problems. When you get a craving, you have brain fog, whatever, you all know whatever your symptoms are when you've eaten a food that sets you up for cravings and wanting to eat more and more and more. And then yellow light foods, and there's some people say there's no such thing as yellow light foods. There's either green or red, that there's not any in between. But what yellow light is a food that, maybe you can handle, you're not sure yet. Maybe you're just not ready to give it up yet. Maybe you have to have a little more boundaries around it. For me, there isn't a yellow light food. There's either green or red. If something bothers me just a little bit, putting a boundary around and weighing and measuring isn't going to keep me from binging on it. It'll set me up for binging. So for me, there are only green and red, but that's me. A lot of people do talk about yellow light.
Thank you so much, Jane. Good afternoon. I'm a food addict and I love starchy foods, though I keep a three-meal plan. I'm having a hard time refraining from them, and even medical opinions suggest not to eliminate carbs from food plans.
Well, I want to at least comment on that since I did eliminate carbs. Medical are very, very much disagreement about there. There are many doctors out there who are very good with what is referred to as a ketogenic food plan, which is typically very low or no carbs. So that's very much in disagreement. We can't say the medical community. It's an outside issue, of course, but there's just no agreement on it. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that about it.
I can't believe it. Our time is up. So, thank you, ladies, for your shares today, for speaking for us, and for the cue, for the nice, for the good answers to those questions. And thank you to everyone who attended this webinar.